This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Everybody is here. Wes Durham.
Good morning.
Chester. I think Fuller's over there by you.
Yeah, he is right here.
Captain
Customary
Ron,
seat.
Yeah, of course. Robert's here. Got the drone. We're still figuring it out.
Otto.
Otto's back there. Otto was sound asleep about 10 minutes ago.
Mrs. P upstairs.
Miss P sound asleep too. She's exhausted after watching her Hokies win last night.
Yeah,
So she's good to go, though.
That's good.
What a crazy day, huh?
Happy Internet birthday, Mark Packer, ladies and gentlemen. Let's roll it out here, shall we? Let's roll it right on out here. Yes. Mark celebrates his big 6-0 today.
60 years old today on the Internet.
60 years old today on the Internet.
Yeah. Kind of tired. I got up at 2 a.m. and blowing out candles for 4 hours.
Yeah. If you're not familiar with Mark's internet birthday, in fact, on the internet, it says today is Mark's birthday.
It's turned 60 today.
And nothing could be further from the truth.
Nope. Dead wrong.
Yeah. By the way, got a lot of texts last night. Got some texts. Several people. But the most notable, Sean Kelly, ESPN Radio, play-by-play voice. He and Bob Valvano. He and Jordan Cornett, actually, today involved in some of our coverage over on the ESPN Radio side, right?
I guess.
Sean's going to be involved.
It's your text.
He texted me last night at 9 o'clock. Two overtime games. I hate Packer.
I try to tell y'all. Y'all should listen to what we're talking. I mean, every now and then we stumble across one and give you a gold crystal ball. We do.
You, last night,
I was praying
caught the wrath of social media for calling for internet, or overtimes.
I don't care. I was praying to the gods last night that Clemson Virginia Tech goes double overtime. Because we said that yesterday. Hey, poor nothing but net crew, we get a little double overtime action. Hey, they're going to start that thing
at midnight.
What time
did that show start last night?
You can stay and watch Virginia and Louisville? You couldn't make it through that?
No, I got to tell you.
You got a head start on your sleep watching that?
Halftime Virginia Louisville, I was in bed.
Really? First to 40?
I decided I was going to...
Had enough?
Not off, yeah.
You tapped out?
Yeah, yeah. Knew we had to get up early. Knew it was a travel day for us on this program. So.
Oh, it is a travel day.
Yeah, it is a travel day. But you're right about the games now. Virginia Tech, Darius Maddox, how big a shot. I mean, if Miami wasn't big enough, you just went the length of the floor last night on your own, didn't you, young man?
What a shot. Cold-blooded.
Oh, my God. Mr. Big Shot.
It was pure, too.
Yes, it was.
He left his hand. He's like, man, it looks pretty good on television.
And he went right to the corner and untucked the jersey and said, here I am. That's at this.
Hello, New York.
Alamir Dawes. Got to get a hand up, my man. Oh, bless your heart. Look at that. Storm Murphy, you ought to go over there and carry him all the way back to the hotel.
I tell you what, though, Storm was making everything he looked at in the first half.
First half, Storm Murphy was like that kid in the driveway to take your milk money.
And that wasn't just a win, Wes.
No.
That was a must win.
Sure was.
Said it yesterday. For the Commonwealth of Virginia, you had no options last night.
Right.
You had to win if you want to get to the NCAA tournament. Still doesn't guarantee anything. Mm-hmm. You just had to survive.
Yeah.
And both of them last night literally survived.
Yep.
All that matters is scoreboard, and you get a chance to play on a Thursday.
Virginia Tech, by the way, was 6 of 8 from 3 in the first half. They shot 75%. Holy smokes, right? Storm Murphy was a good bit of that pack, as you said a moment ago.
Made everything.
You know, they led the ACC in three-point shooting. They've got guys that can shoot it. 1 to 5 can shoot it. Mutz doesn't drift out there much, but he's there.
How about the bench? The bench play for Virginia Tech was outstanding.
Yeah, Maddox included.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't the only one.
Right.
I mean, in the first half, when they started to pull away.
Padula and.
I mean, the entire bench got the job done last night for Virginia Tech.
Yeah, it was a really good game, and it got really good in the last 5 minutes when Clemson dug back and got the thing to overtime. And you saw why we have said the last 2 days on this show that P.J. Hall is a better player than everybody thinks he is. I mean, last night you saw how good P.J. Hall is because he's not anywhere near 100%, and he's willing Clemson to overtime.
I'll say it again. I said it Monday when we did the ACC Awards. The fact that P.J. Hall wasn't on third team, worst case scenario, is almost shameful.
It is.
Like I said, there are not 15 players in the league better than P.J. Hall. I promise you.
Virginia Tech's bench is packed, noted 23 points last night for Mike Young. Just a really, really entertaining ball game, I thought.
14 lead changes. And given what was at stake, you know, Clemson playing their best basketball of the year, had all the momentum late. Virginia Tech just trying to get it to the finish line And you were like, oh, man, they have got to win this game.
Yeah.
I mean, there are no options, like I said. And they found a way to win in overtime. And, you know, for Brad Brunell, I was looking something up last night when it happened. And I jotted this down. He's been at Clemson 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's 12 ACC tournaments.
Yep.
1 year we had, of course, no tournament, but Clemson won earlier the day before and didn't get a chance. So,
right, they beat Miami.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So they've had 11 losses in the 12 years of the tournament that he's been there. They've got a three-point, they've got, excuse me, 3 1-point losses.
Yeah.
3 3-point losses. 1 4-point loss. 2 5-point losses. A 6-point loss. And a 7-point. That's the 11. And he's had, he's 1-3 in overtime games.
Yeah.
Clemson now, by the way, 0-6 since Dirt in 1-point games in the ACC tournament. Mm-hmm. 1-8
in
overtime games.
Yep.
That's sure crazy. Are. That's hard. That is hard to do.
In fact, the last time they lost to Georgia Tech in D.C. in overtime in 2016. There you go, 88-85 that day as a 7 seed. It's just, I mean, look.
I guess they're unlucky. Is that what you're going to tell me?
They would probably be somewhere on that chart.
Oh, is that right?
I would guess in ACC tournament play. But, you know, here they are, and Virginia Tech is alive, and they're in the conversation. Now, the interesting part.
And a heavy favorite, according to BPI, to beat Notre Dame.
Excuse me?
I'm not stuttering.
What? Really?
Oh, yeah.
No.
What do you mean, no?
BPI You're telling knows me BPI all. Is picking Virginia Tech to beat Notre Dame?
Easily.
Well.
Easily.
I haven't seen those numbers yet.
What do you want to see?
65%, I'm being told?
Yeah. BPI. I mean, the Hokies already beat Notre Dame once. If you remember, I thought that kind of saved their season
time right.
when they got off to the terrible start. And we even said, I remember that game
yeah.
in Blacksburg. Notre Dame was playing great.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, hey, Virginia Tech, what's going on here? We thought you were one of the five best teams in the league. And
right.
you had to win. And they did. Remember that? They won like by 6, I think it was. And they just kind of grinded their way through it. So,
wow.
huge game for the Hokies today.
Okay.
Humongous.
There you see, the only meeting, the 79-73 game.
That's 6 points. There you go.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the news of the day, though. For all the good that was, it wasn't this. Holy smokes. Earl Grant in Boston College.
Oh, I thought there was something else.
You've been saying all year, BC plays hard. Well, I got to be honest with you. I thought the game, the way the game started yesterday, Wake Forest looked a little groggy.
They did.
After a week off.
Sure did.
And yet they had the 10-point lead late. What, 7 minutes left? Six minutes
to go. They're up 10. But they had to grind to get that lead. And when they finally broke through, Wes, it felt like, okay, you know what? You sleptwalk for 25, 30 minutes. Now you're going to find a way to close it. And then BC took off.
Yeah. And the reason it seemed like that Wake Forest couldn't get the game to their pace consistently yesterday, didn't
Especially
it?
Especially early.
Right. And
Alanis Williams did not look the part of the ACC Player of the Year yesterday.
That's correct.
Right? Yeah. I mean, foul trouble, a lot of turnovers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In fact, Jake LaRavia kind of saved Wake in the first half because if he doesn't take off for a little bit, they would have been down double digits.
Well, Miss Jean texted me last night and she said, well, Wake was disappointing. And I went, it was disappointing.
Jean's
I said, but when your two best players, and Steve Forbes said this postgame, when your two best players have 11 combined turnovers, that's a problem.
Yeah, and you can't make a free throw.
That's the other issue. Because, I mean, whether you're in or not, we'll get to that. But you can't beat anybody when you have double-figure turnovers from two players and shoot poorly at the free throw line. Yep. That's just a recipe for disaster for the whole team.
Exactly.
I thought Monsanto came off the bench and actually tried to pull it from the fire for him.
Yep, totally agree. I was stunned when Wake blew the 10-point lead. I thought by the time, hey, you kind of stumbled through the whole day – 6 minutes ago, you're up 10. You're like, okay, you played right. good enough basketball for 5 minutes.
You're going to live to tell about it.
Yeah, you're going to survive. You get one of those games where you didn't have the A effort and you survived, right? You mm-hmm. always hear those kind of stories in the tournament.
Right.
And this was Wake's game, but they're going to survive. But I'll tell you, man, Coach Grant's kids, they play hard. And yeah. I thought the other thing, too, Wes, given the fact that Wake had a week off, you got to figure they had fresh legs. And BC playing the night before – and I know they wax Pitt, but we talked about tired legs that second game. And normally you see that late stages,
yeah, right?
It was almost the polar opposite happened. And I give, again, BC just an amazing job. And then They get the thing to overtime, and then they take over. I mean, they took over overtime.
I thought Jaden Zachary's three to start overtime was enormous.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Because Wake's thinking, okay, we got it to overtime. We can impose our will, and bang, Zachary knocks down a three.
We're not going anywhere.
We're not going anywhere.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
100, you and I are thinking the exact same thing.
Okay.
Great win for BC.
Let's spend a moment or two on the fortunes of Wake Forest here. All right? We had some discussion on this show about five being the ceiling. Have we not?
Yep.
Okay. We've also talked about the ability to declare a five, but it not be the five when we get to that point, right? Duke, Notre Dame, Carolina, Miami, Wake Forest, okay? We had Virginia Tech and Virginia kind of lurking on the last four in, next four out, six removed from twice confirmed out, whatever the case may be, right? So is it possible that with a win today, Virginia Tech against Notre Dame, that we get a replacement of the five? That Virginia Tech would, in fact, replace Wake Forest? I don't know that. But I think you have to be prepared for that if you're going to follow this tournament. The more Virginia Tech wins, it compounds the Wake loss. The other tournaments that are going on, tell you what Wake can't afford. Somebody else to go headhunting in their conference tournament out of the bottom of the bracket that's not already expected to go. That's why these are going to be about three or four sleepless nights for Deacon fans. It's just the facts.
Yeah, Wake Forest fans will be on edge Sunday for sure. I'm going to tell you right now, if you're a Wake Forest fan, a Virginia fan, and a Virginia Tech fan, you today need to do whatever it takes to bring out the maize and blue, because you know what? You got to root like you know what for Michigan today. Because Michigan at 11:30 this morning plays Indiana.
Right.
Indiana is a team that's right there in the middle of all of you. All of you. And what you need is Michigan to blow them out of the water
right.
in the Big Ten tournament.
Yep.
You really do. Because now you got to start looking at all these bubble teams and go, okay, who can help? Xavier losing last night to Butler? Good news. Get them out.
Yep.
Get them out. See ya. They don't get a chance to play anymore. But you really need Michigan today to beat Indiana. And again, that's the first game in the Big Ten tournament today.
Yeah.
That's a huge game. If Indiana wins that, they're starting to leapfrog people. Because all these other folks, Wake, Tag, you're it. You blew it. Mm-hmm. Right? Virginia Tech, you get an opportunity tonight to kind of reinforce that resume.
All
it's
right.
an important time, man.
As it stands, Joe Lunardi, the CEO of Bracketology.
I'm worried about Joe, though. You know why? Because Joe was asked immediately after Wake lost, what does it mean? He's like, nothing.
Right.
Like, wait a minute, yeah. Joe.
Joe did say that. Well, he sent an email out confirming that.
Time out. Because some of us don't really believe in bracketology. Some of us don't. Some of us think it's total garbage. So let me explain my thought here.
Okay.
For whatever it's worth, if you believed in all this stuff, right? How do you have a quad three loss and you go, nothing happened, and you're on the bubble. How is that possible? You can't have a quad.
And this was before Xavier lost, right?
Xavier hadn't played yet. Okay. Wake loses, and Joe Lunardi goes, Wake, hey. There's nothing to see here.
Joe gone Karnak on us.
What? Now, he may be right at the end of the day. I got no idea, but you can't say nothing happened. We just lost a terrible quad three loss in the resume.
Yes,
and we're still good.
Yeah.
I mean, if he'd have said, listen, that's troublesome for Wake. They could drop if. I didn't get that. Nothing happened. Go ahead with Joe Lunardi. I'm done.
Who else would you – we'll talk about this coming up. Who else would you group, though? You got to put SMU in that mix, right?
All of them.
All of them. Indiana's the one you got to worry about today.
Indiana's ready to leapfrog people. If they win today, because that's a really good win.
Yeah. We'll get into the bubblicious portion of this program coming up. Earl Grant, congratulations.
Great. Back-to-back Ws.
I mean,
tremendous.
You know what? Good for you, my man.
Yeah.
You've stayed on the path a long first year, right?
No, I mean,
remember he talked about the hunt when we were on. He was on with us a couple weeks ago. How about that? The hunt. Finally got a little bit on the hunt, didn't he?
The Swiss, though. This is why you're the Swiss, man. Terrible loss for Wake, but you know what? We're rooting for him on Sunday. That's what everybody. Yeah. It's a Swiss.
Got to go back to Al Skinner and the old Flex to find a first-year BC coach that won two games at the tournament.
He's only going to get better players.
Absolutely. I'm just telling you,
you better get them now because you can tell they have bought into his system.
Jaden Zachary's a freshman.
He's a dude.
He's a junior college freshman, which is really interesting because he went 1 year to Chipola. He played down there for Donnie Tindall, who, as we all know, is a little basketball savant. Remember, Donnie Tindall kind of ran afoul with some of the
– No.
Yes. Donnie yes, I'm did. Afraid so at Tennessee. Yes.
He's the dude with, like, the 17-year clause, show clause.
I think it's in that neighborhood. Yeah.
It's double digits. I know that.
But he's at Chipola now, coaching junior college ball, and he's a good basketball coach.
Is that the Art Browse there for their football team?
No? No, that was another school. But Jaden Zachary's just a freshman. I mean, you know, you've had Karnick, you've had Quentin Post as a transfer of Mississippi State. People didn't see him yesterday. If you hadn't seen BC and watched yesterday, you're like, what in the world?
No, they
play like that all year. Yeah. Now, they'll throw an El Dosarito at you every once in a while.
Speaking of throwing stuff, we're going to talk about that in the next segment, throwing punches?
Let me tell you who's on the show first. Virginia baseball coach Brian O'Connor will be here in about 30 minutes. Cavaliers off to a pretty good start there in hardball.
Undefeated.
Yep.
Offensive weaponry everywhere.
Terrence Oglesby, field of 68, among other endeavors. Fresh off the Southern Conference tournament. He's tremendous. Former Clemson Tiger will join us at 9 o'clock. Brendan Marks, I believe, is in Brooklyn. We will hear from him at 9:30. And Jim Larrañaga, in case you missed it from yesterday. By the way, how about Larrañaga? Comes on the show. All you people saying don't invite my coach on the show because their team loses. How about Larrañaga? Comes on the show and gets what, Pac?
Contract
extension. That's right.
Jim Forbes Monday comes on the show.
Contract extension. You know what we're in the business of now? Getting people paid.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Thursday. Your lucky number is 582 today for anybody keeping score.
I failed to mention that the voice of victory will be here 8:30 for Over Under.
Got the pom-poms out, too.
He's feeling it.
Feeling it.
You know why? Because the happy final was 96-57.
Gosh.
96-57.
I got to tell you, I turned it once Syracuse got up by 42.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't. I watched it when Patty came in. Patty came in, hit some shots.
Mm-mm. They got up 42. That was it for me. I figured if they can get up by 42, then I'm allowed to get ready on the radio show. That's what I did. What a performance.
Look at here. Cole Swider. Okay, who wants to have a shooting contest with Cole Swider? Anybody? I didn't think so.
How good was he at North Carolina, right?
That's what I'm saying.
36, and then he shows up in Brooklyn like, hey, man, let's go. Syracuse was unbelievable yesterday.
You know what Cole Swider played? He was looking to get in a car to get to a park in Manhattan to play another game.
Dude, they were so good yesterday. We saw – this is a broken record for Syracuse. They have the potential. When they are making shots, they can embarrass you. Right? You know, and that's what I loved about this team in November.
You know what I kept thinking yesterday?
What's that?
Your Syracuse is playing Florida State. This is all that you'd hope for in October.
That's what I thought we were going to get.
This is what you and Macri dreamt of.
Brent Axe.
This Syracuse.
Right.
Right here.
That's what I thought we were going to see.
Let's get back into history, shall we? They beat Carolina in the last game before COVID.
Remember that night?
Yes, sir. 2020. 28 points. Green Tar Heels are never in it. 31-point win against UConn, 1980. That had to be at the Garden because I heard they're celebrating their 40th anniversary. Oh, that might not have been at the Garden. That was 80. 39-point win against Florida State on Wednesday.
That was yesterday.
They beat Boston College by 99. No, it's 41 in 99. 96-55. That was in 1999 at the Big East Tournament. And that was at the Garden. And I mean, hit everything they looked at. Frank Anselm was a problem. I mean, Syracuse played about as well offensively as we've seen all year.
Outstanding. It was the tied for the third largest margin in ACC tournament history, tying that 1963 Wake Forest team that ran it up on Maryland after screwing the Tigers the year before in the ACC championship game, Billy's team. could have been the Tigers' only ACC championship. But my dad, Billy,
yeah,
and those guys took care of the Clemson Tigers in 62. But Syracuse was tremendous yesterday. I mean, they really were
dynamic. Guess
what?
All of that didn't make the headlines. Do you know why? Because the headlines were this. Yesterday, first half action, coming down the floor, Buddy Boeheim basically hit Wyatt Wilkes in the stomach. Watch the trail play here, first half. Wilkes checks out Boeheim, and going back up the floor, Buddy puts a right cross in the midsection of Wyatt Wilkes.
Can't do that.
No.
That punch, anybody who's a student-athlete throwing the punch, I got news for you. I thought it was an easy call by the league.
Right.
I got to be honest with you. And I'm not sure what the officials were doing here. I mean, dude, just guys don't normally just go down on one knee.
Right.
Without there being something, hey, son, you okay? What's the matter? You got a cramp? I mean, what's going on here? Hey, the referees didn't do anything with it. The league did. I thought the league made an easy call.
Yeah.
On Buddy Bay. And we've had Buddy on the show.
Great kid.
Half a dozen times. As great a dude as you want to talk about. First team all ACC player.
Mm-hmm.
He apologized afterwards. We'll get into all that kind of stuff. You'll hear all the sound bites. It was unfortunately a terrible thing that happened. He's sorry for it. But the team effort yesterday was a 10 on a 10 scale.
Yeah. So after the game, the great performance, the blowout win, all that. Now remember, all these comments you're getting ready to hear. Jim Boeheim, Leonard Hamilton. This was long before the final verdict was delivered. Here's Coach Boeheim.
Jim, early in the first half, there appeared to be a play where a Buddy caught a Florida State player in the midsection.
I saw the play. The kid pushed him twice, and he swung around and hit him. And I think it was inadvertent, but that's okay. No, I don't think he hit. He just swung around, and it was contact. The kid pushed him twice. You can't just let people push you around.
I'm going to make this as simple as possible. The coach is going to defend his player, much right. less his son.
Correct.
I don't think it was a great look, to be honest with you. If you ever watched the play and you're like, okay, again, I understand the coach wanting to defend his. I thought there was an easier way to answer the question with the way, as opposed to what Boeheim did, in my opinion. And the follow up was like, excuse me, did you see the play? I mean, did you really see the play? Because
correct.
We all saw the play. You can't throw a punch. It's right. that simple. So I get why coach wants to defend his guy, much less his son.
Sure.
But the ACC got it right. ACC got it right.
All right, here's Leonard Hamilton with his thoughts on the play.
First, let me say this. It's not a better kid in ACC than Buddy Boeheim. He's a class kid, tremendous character. He's a young man who's competitive, like everyone else. And I don't want anything to take away from how well they played and what type of fine young man he is. The game is physical. You expect guys to go out and bang and be aggressive and if something inadvertently happens, sometimes we want to, you know, categorize it in one way or another.
Okay. Spot on.
Yeah. Here's Buddy Boeheim's statement after the game, by the way. And this is going to kind of blow inadvertent out of the water. In the heat of today's game, after some shoving in the lane, I swung my arm while turning to go back up the court. It was wrong to act out in frustration. I apologized to Wyatt Wilkes multiple times in the handshake line. He said not to worry about it, but I know it was wrong. I pride myself in respecting the game and our opponent. I will not react that way again.
I mean, that okay. doesn't surprise me at all from no. Buddy Boeheim. Like I said,
not at all.
We've had him on a half dozen times. He's an incredibly great kid, tremendous player, and he screwed up, made a mistake. Again, we all make mistakes.
Right.
But you know, the punishment is one game suspension.
Correct. And so the Orange will play today, you know, without Buddy Boeheim, arguably the ACC's leading scorer and the central figure in their offense and in their success this year.
That is not ideal. Taking on a Duke team, it's got to be in a pretty nice mood after what happened to them Saturday night at Cameron. And if this is the last time we've seen him play, let me just say, it's been an honor to watch him play.
Right.
I know that he didn't want to go out that way as far as the punch and people talking about it, but I'm not going to think of Buddy Boeheim in that category. The guy's been terrific for Syracuse. He's been great for the ACC. And if that happens to be the last game, for argument's sake, it's been fun to watch him play.
I'll go back to the conversation with Brent Axe yesterday. And I know Buddy Boeheim has pro basketball aspirations. I don't know how volatile the landscape is or isn't for his services. But I'll continue to say this. Buddy, come back. Come back and play the year you've got if you want to. Jimmy, come back and file and play the year if you want to. I mean, I'm not sure there's a difference in going now or going a year from now in your world. And I don't want to see it end like this. I'll be that guy. I don't want to see it end like this. I don't want to see it end with you suspended. Now, if your team wins, hey, you get a reprieve, right? But I don't like your chances today either.
I don't know why you say that. They lost by 20 and 27, respectively, the first two times they played. In fact, both games, Duke has had leads of over 30 against Syracuse.
Right.
That's with Buddy Boeheim in the lineup.
Correct. So, I mean, I understand it, but, man, you know what? Because your dad's coming back, it sounds like. Just come on back, play one more.
Yeah, but you know what, though? I'll say this, Wes. You know, we can't live in their shoes.
No,
on
we
that
can't.
Perspective. And, right. You know, you want to go chase a dream, go chase it. I mean, you've been great for the league. You've been great for Syracuse. I'm selfish as a college fan as opposed to the NBA.
Right.
I'd love to see him back. Mm-hmm. But if they decide that, hey, this is it and we're moving on, man, go chase it.
Yeah.
Hope you get it.
No doubt. No doubt. So Duke and Syracuse, they start things at high noon today from Barclays Center in Brooklyn.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham, last show from the basement this week. Are you flying American or Delta today?
Delta. Oh, we love to fly, and it shows.
You'll be there. You'll be there for tomorrow.
Yeah, if you're not there, I'm going to be cobbling together a litany of guests. Just bring your index card
over there.
I got all my tournament material right here for you.
That's right. Just bring your index card and your 63 pens.
I sent you a copy of the card.
Yeah, I don't need it.
I know you don't. Just thought you might want to have a look at it, though.
I'm flying American Airlines, my favorite airline. I'm taking the last flight out of Charlotte. What could go wrong?
Given your track record, a lot.
Me and American Airlines, Airlines and BPI, it's a neck and neck race.
It's a love-hate relationship.
And bracketology. It's a three-way race. Yeah. So you can get the finish line first.
All right, let's get you the details. The facts and filaments, as Brother Al used to say, on the final game yesterday in the second round. Virginia 51, Louisville 50.
I got to tell you.
You saw it coming, didn't you?
This was for diehards only. Fans of Louisville and Virginia, I know you watched, but if you were a basketball fan, you had to be a diehard to get through this one last night.
You had to lock in on this one.
This was one of those, get some caffeination and let it rip, because you're going to need it, because neither one of these teams could throw it in the Hudson.
Yep.
I mean, really, this was an offensive struggle from the get-go.
You see the numbers, 8 points, 5 rebounds, 9 dimes for Reese Beekman last night. Samuel Williamson. I tell you, Sidney Curry.
Oof,
Sidney Curry is he going to be a problem. That guy is a specimen inside, isn't he?
Yeah, the problem was putting the ball in the basket.
The fundamental piece of shooting went the route of the dinosaur last night.
But at the end of the night, though, Wes, Virginia, like Virginia Tech, and unfortunately not like Wake Forest, the object is to win the game.
Find a way.
I mean, was it ugly? Yes, it was. But it's a W, and you move on to play another day.
That's exactly right.
All you wanted if you were Virginia.
Yep. So there we go. That's the way it ends. 51-50. Gardner had 17. Virginia did not hit a three in the game. Back.
Has a since dirt game last night.
Really?
Yep. It's the first time ACC tournament. Team did not make a three.
Since the rule was brought in, huh?
Since the rules changed in 1983. We've never had a team go over from beyond the arc and win until last night.
All right. With all that, before we get to the quarters, let's visit with Tremaine, shall we?
He's been on hold since Tuesday.
Is that right? Okay, 844-SAY-ACCN. Tremaine, welcome.
Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen. I'm glad that you caught that Since Dirt reference, Wes or Mark. Yeah, I agree. Like, it was ugly, but we got the W. But it was interesting. You know, if you check social media, even from other fans from other schools, there was a singular question that was asked last night that UVA still been asking, and that is, how in the world did Reese Beekman not win Defensive Player of the Year? You know, I won't take anything from Mark Williams. He's a great player, but he's also 19 feet tall. He doesn't have to play much defense. You just stand there. If the ball comes, swing an arm. You're going to block it. Reese Beekman fundamentally alters his opponent's game, steals, blocks, you know, shooting percentage. And so the more you watch him, and like I said, even though the fans from other schools are going, how in the world did he not win Defensive Player of the Year? But I agree, we got to play much better tonight to beat UNC. But at the end of the day, it's W, win in advance.
Tremaine, I would say that I didn't catch the social media wave last night for Reese Beekman, but I, knowing what I've heard and chatter among all ACC fans, there was quite an argument for Mark Williams, Reese Beekman, and Leaky Black. That's, I mean, that Defensive Player of the Year award, and I said this on Monday, the voting was difficult on about three different levels for this, and that was one of them. Defensive Player of the Year, thought most improved, was a P.J. Hall, Darion Sebron situation, and, you know, in the Player of the Year situation. So,
how'd you vote?
I voted Alondis Williams. I voted for Leaky Black. And I voted P.J. Hall most improved. So I got one of the three.
You got one more.
I got one, three, right? And Coach of the Year, too. We talked about that, right? I mean, it was – those are all difficult, difficult decisions. Reese Beekman's a fantastic defensive player.
He really is.
And he was great again last night. Leaky Black will play today, and he's a good one. Mark Williams plays at noon. He's good. And you're right. A lot of people try to take block shots and use that as the premise to be the Defensive Player of the Year. I would tell you this. I thought Mark Williams did a really good job protecting baskets, not just in blocking shots. I thought he affected play in baselines. I thought he got in passing lanes. Now, that only justifies his candidacy. It doesn't mean he's going to win, right? So it's a good argument. It's a good discussion. The good news is, hopefully, knock on wood, they're all three players who are going to come back, because Leaky Black's eligible to come back for one more at Carolina.
Yeah, it's a healthy debate.
Yep, sure is.
You know, and I get the frustration if your guy didn't win. Totally get it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, more importantly, Virginia's playing basketball that matters.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, the good news is Reese is still on your roster.
Yep.
And Virginia and North Carolina will get after each other tonight, late night. And I hope the game's more competitive than the first time, because when they were in Chapel Hill this year, North Carolina wore them out.
That was an important win for Carolina
at
the time, too.
It was, because the Hoos have owned the Heels.
That's right.
They've beaten them seven straight, and North Carolina took them to the woodshed in the Smith Center.
So Beekman and Black on the same floor together tonight, starting at 9:30. Now, you'll note the coverage today, and we can do this because we're on ACC Network. You'll note the coverage is ESPN at noon, right? And then ESPN2 has the middle two games, and then the last game of the night is on ESPN. So some people get the TV, let it lock, just let it ride. That's not the case here today. So you'll want ESPN for the noon start, then switch over to ESPN2 for the middle two, and back to ESPN for the 9:30 game. And then about midnight tonight, I'm guessing nothing but that again.
Assuming there isn't an overtime.
Assuming there isn't another overtime.
We warned you yesterday. Packer and Durham running
you,
their mouths.
You think there's an overtime on here somewhere?
I do think there's one.
My gosh.
I do. I think there's a chance. There's one game on there tonight that I think's got a chance.
Miami Boston College.
Nope.
Carolina Virginia.
I think that game could
my goodness.
But that's not the one I was going to pick.
You were going to pick Notre Dame, Virginia Tech.
I think Notre Dame, Virginia Tech is, I said a week and a half ago, I think Virginia Tech's the scary team.
People are gonna listen to you, man, because you're playing with hot money.
I am on a roll.
Rolling the dice with hot money.
You know, So when you turn 60 on the internet, you know stuff.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Hey, don't forget women's lacrosse tonight, 8 o'clock. No, I'm sorry, next week from tonight. Wes, I got it. March 17th. That's it. Yeah. It's a week from tonight. 8 o'clock. It's a good one. Number 7 Duke welcomes Louisville. ACC women's lacrosse on ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app. It's the Thursday that throws you off.
Yeah. It's the Thursday.
All right.
It's not the March 17th. It's the Thursday that bothers me.
Yeah, it's the Thursday piece. Let's go to Charlottesville this
morning.
Let's
go to Charlottesville.
Let's pivot to baseball. Brian O'Connor and the Cavaliers are 12-0, and a weekend series awaits with Duke after a win over George Washington. Look, this says it's number 19. This says it's season 19 on my sheet here. That can't possibly be right. You just got the job, didn't you?
If tell you, it feels like it's went really, really fast. I was shocked as well when it was year 19. And, you know, just it's been an incredible amount of fun. We got a great group again this year. And, boy, it just goes fast. And it's been a special place here in Charlottesville for sure.
You know what? I had some dude send me an email last night and said, Pack, what's wrong with Virginia's offense? He was talking about Tony Bennett. I said, there's nothing wrong with the offense of Virginia. You need to just follow baseball, man. Those dudes are hitting everything that comes in the zone. I mean, offensively, you guys have been dynamite.
Yeah, we have. You know, these first 12 games, we've certainly done everything that we can do, right? I think our pitching has been really good. It's thrown strikes. We've played excellent defense, and the story's really been our offensive ball club. You know, the last 9 games, we've scored 10 or more runs every game. That's hard to do, you know, and it's been very, very opportunistic. We had a number of guys that have hit a bunch of home runs, and, you know, we've got a mix in our lineup, guys, of veteran guys like Kyle Teal and Jake Geloff, Chris Newell, you know, Max Cotier, players like that. But then you have 4 freshmen that are impacting our lineup pretty much every day. So that's been fun to watch their development, and it's been exciting. That said, looking forward to going down to Duke this weekend and getting ACC play started.
Yeah, Tommy White's been the home run star in this league, but Casey, is it Sauk? Is that right? Brian has been the freshman hitting star in this league for average?
He has. Yeah, Casey Sauk is how you pronounce it, and he's a freshman from New York, and you know, just outfielder, third baseman kind of player, good athlete, but he can swing the bat. He's got some power. He's hitting for high average. He's done a nice job. So, you know, hopefully he can continue to do what he's doing and should be a great player in our program for 3 or 4 years.
Is this one of those guys you sneak in like every year? You know, you just kind of, yeah, see, you're smiling because you know I'm telling the truth here. Like Panero, yeah. You bring these guys in. It's kind of like they're all packed. Just so you know, they're all like 6'2", 6'3". They're all like anywhere from 175 to like 195. Go on, right, O? I mean, seriously. Yeah. It's the same Virginia guy that comes in. You think you know something about him. You're not sure. And next thing you know, he's hitting 500 with 10 homers. It just feels like you got the trademark on this stuff.
Well, thanks for noticing that. We take a lot of pride in it, and those position players. We've always had, as you know, really good athletes, and you know, grabbing some of these kids from the Northeast and bringing them down and giving them baseball every day. Some of them have also been basketball or football players, and really focusing on, you know, the sport of baseball, and they get stronger and continue to develop and develop. And so, you know, Casey's just one example of those kind of guys that we've had. And I think, you know, we've shown a good track record, and that's what we look for in recruiting. And then they, you know, they're here for 3 years, and fortunately a lot of them have ended out being pretty darn good major league draft picks.
Brian, you mentioned getting started with the ACC play, the road trip to Duke. Every year is a different year. Every year is a different team. But last year, I am sure it's a reminder. I'd be stunned if you haven't brought it up. That, hey, guess what, guys? We got off to a lousy start in the league, and it really put all the pressure late to say, hey, if we're going to get into the dance, we got to win out and go on a crazy run, which you did. But you got to get off to a good start. And one thing we know about this league already, there's a bunch of teams that have a zero right now still in the loss column, which means the quality of depth of this league is outstanding. So getting off to a quick start in the league, seems to be paramount, especially at Virginia.
It is. Certainly, we know what happened to us last year, and we put ourselves in a challenging position. Fortunately, we crawled out of it and got hot at the end of the year, and that's what you need to do. But you certainly don't want to be in that position. We had never, in my 19 years here, we had never been in that position before. So absolutely, you want to get off to a good start. And, you know, some weekends in this league, you all know that sometimes you just want to hold serve. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you, in this league, you win one game on a weekend, that can be a really good weekend. So although we'd all want to win them all, it's showing right now after three weekends going into conference play that there is a lot of great teams in this league. Everybody can win every weekend. And it's about coming out and playing good, sound, solid baseball. We did not do that the first half of the year last year, and that's what put us in the position we were in. And hopefully this year we can get off to a little bit better start. But I'm sure Duke, and we play Boston College the second weekend. I'm sure they're all looking to try to do the same thing as well.
I want to put this in perspective for folks who are just kind of picking up college baseball, right? It seems like when postseason basketball hits is when people start beginning to follow baseball as a whole on the collegiate level. We saw the bonus year, the COVID stuff, the extra year, whatever you want to call it, kick in a little bit with football and basketball this year. Transitive nature of the sport in those two areas as well. What's it been like so far for you as you look at other teams seeing the extra year? Obviously more familiar names, guys may be coming back. How does it work? What do you think the impact's going to be as you move forward with not just your team, but in this league?
Well, I think it's going to be significant. You know, the change, obviously the addition of the COVID year is significant. Maybe not quite as much, guys, in the sport of baseball, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you're elite level players in our league, you're signing professionally after your third year of college baseball. So that COVID year never appears on the elite level players like it might in a football or a basketball, just because of the nature of our draft. You know, you do see it a little bit that, you know, in guys that are, you know, adding depth to your team and great college baseball players, but the elite guys are still moving on to professional baseball. I think where you're really seeing an impact right away, right now, this year, you know, is the transfer player. And that's only going to continue to progress. I mean, we're seeing it right now in the ACC basketball championship. You see some of these players that have landed at ACC schools from other schools and the impact they've had on our team. That's the case for baseball as well. And so I think the combination of those things is going to make it very, very interesting from a recruiting standpoint and building out your roster and your depth to be the most competitive you can be. And I really believe the schools that are good at it are going to excel moving forward, and you're going to need to be good at it to be successful.
Brian, the big donkey's not coming out of the bullpen anymore. So who becomes the character or characters on this roster?
I don't know if there will be another one like him. you know, I think there's, from a position player standpoint, there's a lot of guys that really stand out. Kyle Teal is our catcher's an incredibly talented player. But for me, guys, he's a throwback. He loves to play the game. He's got a smile on his face all the time. He's loose. He's got a ton of energy. Just a very talented, exciting player. But the way he plays the game is a lot of fun to watch. You know, I think Jake Geloff, the younger brother of Zach, who manned third base for us for 3 years, now Jake's playing third base, is really talented and very, very aggressive with the bat. He does not get cheated. He's fun to watch hit. His results are showing that right now. And, you know, those two guys are both sophomores that, you know, have made integral impacts on our team last year. By the end of the year, they were everyday players and impacted our lineup significantly. And those are two that, you know, fans are going to love to watch play baseball in our uniform.
Yeah. Well, you always have guys. I'm always fascinated by the composition, and it's the success you guys have had in building that program over the 19 years, because you always have the checks and balances. For every three, you got a four, right? You try and find that balance of guys who can sustain your program a little bit. And it's always also interesting to look at the balance you create with pitching and hitting too. And I know everybody kind of takes it for granted, but there is some truth to that, I think.
There is. I think to be an elite level program on any kind of consistent basis, it takes the couple of things that you talked about. One, you know, you can't just be a veteran team in one year and have a great year if you want to sustain it. And if you've got talented, skilled players, you're always going to be young to some level because of the Major League draft. You know, so there's always going to be turnover. You're always going to have freshmen making impacts if you've got highly talented players, because you're going to have guys that are going to move on after 3 years, some of them after 2 years, depending on their age. So that's fun. That's exciting. So it's incumbent upon us to bring in new players that can make an immediate impact. And we've done that from some freshman position players this year and some transfer pitchers that have made significant impacts for us. And for me, as you mentioned, it comes back to, you have to be able to pitch and play defense. If you can pitch and play defense, you will be in every game that you play, right? And then when you have an exciting, talented, skilled offense like we've had a number of years here, that's what makes you have a really, really special team, a regional host kind of team, a team that has a chance to get to Omaha when you have the combination of all those things. But that pitching and defense, it shows up every day and gives you a chance and keeps you in the ballgame.
Coach, final question. We've been asking coaches for about the last 6-7 weeks about their ultimate walk-up music. What gets them jazzed getting out of bed each and every day? Of course, walk-up music makes sense for baseball, but for you personally, what's the song? What's the go-to?
I tell you what, I've never really thought about it as walk-up, but first of all, it'd have to be a George Strait song. I'm a huge George Strait fan. My wife and I continue to check the internet to see when he might be playing 2 or 3 concerts in a year. Going to try to get there one time before he's all said and done. But certainly it'd be an old George Strait song, maybe like a, you know, an Amarillo by Morning or something like that would be one of my favorites for sure.
Yes. It's better than All My Exes Live in Texas. That would be certainly there. And in fact, listen, my wife is the biggest George Strait fan in the world, and I've got a story I'll tell you one day that will bring you to tears regarding George Strait.
There you go.
That's the first George Strait reference, I believe, that we've had so far.
I knew O'Connor was a good man. Yeah, I knew O'Connor was my kind of thinking. All right, good to see you. Be well. Good luck this weekend.
Hey, thanks, man. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Virginia, by the way, is the only team in the ACC top 3 in hitting and top 3 in pitching.
It's a good combination, boy.
Right, look, this
that works.
And if you followed last year's saga kind of their season, you kind of knew if he had the right freshmen, the right signees coming in, this was going to be a pretty good year. Just remember now kind of how the checks and balances went on those
guys.
Got
to get off to a better start, though. That was a problem last year. Put them under a lot of pressure, but they delivered. They were really good by the end of the year.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.